We have a sign up in our clubhouse that says person in bold and cap and then a line and then athlete in lowercase and not bolded. And so they see it every day they walk into the clubhouse, because it's not something you can say just one time at the beginning of the year, but you have to continually show it to them week after week after week after week. They realize they're going to be okay. You know, I'm going to appreciate her more for the type of kid she is, her leadership, her ability to be a great teammate, you know, ability to get stuff done in the classroom. That's way above anything on the field. And I wish somebody would have told me that when I was 22, because I think I would have won more games, you know, my first 10 years. It's amazing. I've won more now when I literally put the person first and not worry about winning and not worry about losing.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, how about another Certified Audio Gold episode to get this week rolling downhill? And we truly appreciate each and every one of you out there joining in on the conversation with us. Our loyal listeners out there are bought in. They know where we stand on this. But for those of you just clicking into this podcast for the very first time, welcome. And if you're into personal growth, you acknowledge that you're not a finished product and there's more work to be done. You're out there searching for the better way. You drop your ego at the door and you relish the opportunity to learn from anyone. You want more for yourself and for your players. You're working to find that one coaching cue, the right perspective, a drill, the team concept, the cultural aspect that your program needs to make the next step forward. Then you're in great company here with our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, and thanks again for dialing us in. We have an absolute dime of an episode in the on-deck circle for you today, but first and foremost, we want to make sure you are aware that this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association and the thousands of coaches worldwide that we represent. For only $45, you can invest in yourself and your coaching development and jump on board with the baseball coaches fraternity here at ABCA. We are prepping right now and gaining a full head of steam towards our ABCA convention this January 4th through the 7th, and we're touching down in sunny Indianapolis to set up shop for 6,000 coaches from around the world to join us. And there is nothing else like the experience at one of our shows. It's learning, it's networking, it's the personal growth opportunity of the year for coaches, and it's the perfect time of year to recharge your batteries before the spring season is upon us. You could walk the floor in the world's largest baseball trade show. Over 300 exhibitors will be there in Indy. You could take in one of the 45 teaching clinics between our main stage clinicians and our expo theater presentations. You could bump elbows and trade base running systems and pitching plans with coaches across every single level of baseball. And if all that doesn't sink your battleship, I will be there personally. Oh yes, I have carved out that week to be there live and in person, G'd up from the feet up, pocket squares intact and in place. Bro hugs and selfies are free, and we'll be giving them out like Christmas extended all the way into 2018. You can just go over to our website, abca.org. If you click on events, you can see for yourself what 4 days of baseball heaven looks like, and we hope to see you in Indianapolis with us. Now back to today's show. As we cross sport lines here, but we stay true to our mission with these Dugout Chatter segments, where we highlight loyal ABCA members and reflect on the tremendous and endless list of exceptional coaches who are out there making an impact and growing this association. Well, you can't argue with 30 years of continuous ABCA membership from Alabama softball head coach Patrick Murphy, and one of the very best people, period, in coaching. He's a regular on our bi-weekly hashtag ABCA chats, a loyal podcast listener, and more importantly, a committed lifelong learner. It's always great to connect with Murph, and it's easy to hear why he is so adored in Tuscaloosa, but also across coaching circles inside baseball and softball. Walking into his 20th season as the head coach of the Crimson Tide, Coach Murphy has guided Alabama to winning 45 or more games in each of the past 18 seasons. Missed that mark in his very first season, they won 39 games. Come on, Murph, that's unbelievable. And we open up exactly what you heard in Murph's own words in the intro. His approach to coaching the person first, and how he arrived at that. We unpack his growth in coaching, the important figures that impacted him the most, and the dedicated alumni that have helped cement the Alabama softball program at the upper echelon of college softball. So let's not waste another second. Let's dive in headfirst into the show. Help me welcome in Alabama softball head coach and proud ABCA member, Patrick Murphy, to our podcast. And get ready, coaches. This great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, thanks for dialing back into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. We are bringing another Dugout Chatter episode to you, an episode where we highlight continuous, proud, and loyal ABCA members, and we're going a little off script. We're diving into the softball world today as we welcome in the head coach of the University of Alabama softball team, Patrick Murphy. Coach Murphy, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Sheets, it's an honor. Thank you very much.
We're excited to have you, and I think for those that are out there paying attention, you've seen Murph poke his head in on our hashtag ABCA chats. I know he's been a listener of our podcast. I know he's paying attention to what we're doing. The reason he is because he's a 30-year continuous member, which I think is an awesome way to highlight a guy that's in another field, another sport, but you still find value in what's going on here at the ABCA. And we're going to get back into that in a second, but this is a Dugout Chatter episode, and I know softball is known for dugout chatter. So I've got to ask you, Murph, before we kick this off, what's your favorite or most creative dugout chant that you've heard over the years?
Well, I'd have to say most of the time I don't even listen to what they're saying, but it's just a lot of noise for sure.
Sure.
And since I'm in the third base box and we're in the third base dugout, mm-hmm. I can hear it all day long. But it was probably in 2012 we were playing Georgia State, and sometimes our young ladies like to steal from other teams of what their chant is, mm-hmm. and it was something along the line, "We love free bases."
Okay.
And it stuck with our team, and when we got to the World Series that year, I guess one of the cameras were right in front of the dugout, and it got every one of our young ladies saying that, and literally 5 years later, I still hear it when I go out recruiting in the summer of summer ball teams from across the country. So I think that probably was the number one dugout chant that our kids, and they actually borrowed it mm-hmm. from Georgia State. So I got to give them credit.
I like it. Giving some credit out to start the show. I'm going to tell you my favorite, and I use it in every example that I can. It's nacho, nacho pitch. You don't have to swing because it's nacho pitch, which I think is very creative playing on the song. That would be my favorite.
Yes, well, that one, we haven't had that one for a long time, but yeah, that would probably be a good one.
All right, so let's get into this because I think your resume, man, is extremely impressive. I know you're very humble, but I'm going to go through it for you. In your 20th season as head coach, you have won 45 or more games in each of the past 18 seasons, 19 straight tournament appearances. What I love, I think, is really cool, talk about the model of consistency, is back in 2005, you guys in softball introed the super regional format, and you're the only team to appear in all 13 series. You've won 11 of those, been to the College World Series 11 times, and like you mentioned, winning the 2012 NCAA championship. But what I think is even more unique, Murph, and where we go with this for our listeners, is your story. I mean, we can talk about being right there in the chair at Alabama today, but your story in sports and through baseball into softball is so unique, from coaching Little League to high school to jumping in there at Lafayette to coming on board Alabama. Can you walk us through that entire career in sports?
Well, when I played all the sports in high school, a small town in northeast Iowa called Fayette, and population about 964. I graduated ninth in my class, and there was 20 in the graduating class. So it was very, very small. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody played everything. And when I went to college at Northern Iowa, the summer that I came home, the first summer after my freshman year, I got a job with the rec department, and I coached Little League softball and Little League baseball and whatever else they needed me to do. And it just was one of these, it was just a really fun time. I took a coaching class at Northern Iowa, and I got into softball and baseball that way. And then after I graduated from college, I immediately started high school baseball mm-hmm. in Sumner, Iowa. And it was one of the, still to this day, some of the best people I've ever coached. They were just baseball nuts. They would play on the tennis courts because it had lights, and the lights would go off at midnight, and that's when they had to stop playing catch or
wow.
they'd play wiffle ball. And actually, four of those guys came down 3 weeks ago and stayed with me, and The one is a lawyer in Waukee, Iowa, and he called me and said, "Hey, does the offer still stand? Can we come watch a football game?" I said, "Absolutely." And I said, "When do you want to come?" And he goes, "How about LSU?"
Sure.
And I said, "Of course, it's the biggest game of the year." But I got him 4 tickets, and we had a great time. It was really good seeing them.
Wow.
But they really set the tone for my entire career, that group in Sumner, Iowa. And then what I would do is I went to grad school at Louisiana Lafayette, and at that time it was University of Southwestern Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd come home during the summer, coach high school baseball, go back to school. And after the first year, when I went back for the second year, the assistant softball coach had quit suddenly, and the head coach took me out to eat dinner one night at a pizza place. And about halfway through, she said, "Do you want another duty?" And I said, "Sure, what is it?" She said, "My assistant." And she had known that I'd coached high school baseball, and I was actually working in the sports information office at Louisiana Lafayette. And that was my graduate assistantship. And I really respected her and what she was doing. And I said, "Sure, why not?" And so I would coach college softball in the school year and then still go home to Iowa and coach high school baseball. And I did that for 5 summers, I believe. And then I got a job at Northwest Missouri as the interim head softball coach. Only spent 1 year there. They wanted a PE master's degree, and I didn't have that. And then when the SEC started,
mm-hmm.
I applied everywhere, and I got the assistant job at Alabama. And then 2 years later, I got the head job. And just right place at the right time. Everything fell into place, and I'm very, very lucky.
Awesome. I think a unique dynamic, Pat, that a lot of guys don't know is that you've watched the Alabama program grow from day one. Can you open that up for our guys?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, we sent team pictures, but we put it in a baby announcement. And we sent it to all kinds of people on campus because it was literally the first team. There was no softballs, no bats, no uniforms. We played at a city park. And we played at 2 city parks for the first 3 seasons. And it was just really a labor of love because, you know, you're in the football capital of the United States in terms of college football. But there was also a very interesting dynamic in the city, which I didn't know until about maybe 2 years into it, that they had a huge fast pitch male softball town. In the 60s, they'd have 3,000 to 5,000 people watching games. And up for men's fast pitch. And there used to be a really nice park in the middle of downtown, and it was the thing to do. And as we started moving along with our program, I met more and more retired gentlemen that had played. And they really became the start of our fan base when we first started out. And we'd have 10 to 12 at practice almost every day. And it would be these retired former men's fast pitch players. And they just love the game, and they kind of help spread the word, too, because eventually, you know, we've led the nation in attendance for 12 years in a row.
That's right.
And they have spread the word for us. So it was just the neatest thing ever to start a program, and then, you know, in really, really early times, it really started from scratch.
So cool. And hopefully you follow Coach Murphy on Twitter, at UA Coach Murphy. Seems like if you're not, you're one of the only people that aren't following Murph. But I think one of the cool elements, man, tugging at you a little bit, when I watch your alumni get-togethers, I mean, you literally know every single alumni. You coached every alumni that's walked through that program. And I think that's such a unique dynamic that most coaches may not be able to empathize with. How awesome are alumni get-togethers for you on those days?
Oh, that's incredible. And, you know, I used to say I was the Tom Landry of college softball, and then, you know, Tom Landry retired, but
sure.
I know every single kid that played here. I know if she's married, her husband, what she's doing. I know her parents. My email list is about 144, including managers, trainers, sports information directors. It's just been really, really neat to be able to stay in contact with everybody. And, I have a couple dogs named after me. You know, I've been
sure.
Godfather a couple times.
Yep.
This past summer, I went to 5 weddings, which was crazy. So we really try to keep them involved. And actually, next week, I'm headed to Dublin, Ireland for a trip. And 2 years ago was the 20th anniversary of the program. And before the first pitch on the Saturday game, there was about 128 alums, their husbands, their kids, all out on the pitching circle. And they called for me and my assistant coach, who's been with me for all 20 years, Allison Habits. And so we go out to the circle, and the one young lady has a microphone, and she starts talking about what her experience was like at Alabama, and thanks to fans. And then she says, as a way of our thanking Allie and Murph, we started a GoFundMe account, and they gave Allie a trip to Rome. And I turned around, and I said, "Where am I going?" And one of them said, "You're going to Disneyland." So we were laughing on the circle and in the middle of the field, and there's 3,000 people at this game, and over the PA announcer, all I can hear is the start of an Irish jig.
Oh, wow.
And I said, "Are you kidding me?" And so they're sending me to Dublin next week.
The motherland.
Just really, really good people.
Sure.
And couldn't ask for any better alums.
Oh, it's so awesome. Now, we mentioned this in the intro, guys, a 30-year continuous member, Murph. And I remember one of my first conventions, I'm thinking this was probably my second, maybe in 08. And I was eating with my college coach. We were grabbing lunch. And we saw you in the corner. Now, I will say this. You are, I've told you this before, you're a doppelganger for my college coach, Alan Cox. I've said that from day one. And I'm eating lunch with him. And I look over and I go, "Alan, I think you're twins here." And he goes, "Sheets, that's Murph from Alabama." And I go, "No, dude, we're at the ABCA convention. There's no way he's at our show." And sure enough, I'll, you know, make my way over, and you've got the Alabama pullover on, and we talked, we introduced ourselves. I think when you go back to it, man, I think it's interesting for our coaches, man. What's kept you involved with ABCA for 30 years? And more importantly, how did you first get involved, and who prodded you to make the jump?
Well, I think it was when I was at USL, and the assistant baseball coaches there were awesome. And it was Mitch Gaspard, who eventually made his way at Alabama as the head coach, and Todd Butler, who was now the head coach at Wichita State. And, you know, I'd hear them talking about going to the convention, and I think it was probably one of them that convinced me. And, I mean, ever since then, I've tried to go every year. I haven't gone, like, for 30 years in a row, but, I mean, I've been to Nashville, Anaheim, Dallas. I've been to a ton, and it's just one of the greatest fraternities. And like you've said, everybody shares. They're friendly. I mean, I've met some of the nicest people in my professional career, college baseball guys. And one time I'm out to eat, and it was in Chicago. It was freezing. We were on Michigan Avenue, and the waitress comes over, and she has two drinks. And I said, "Well, I don't think I ordered this." And she said, "No, the gentleman over there did." And it was Jason King.
Yeah.
It was the year after we won the national championship. And so I go over, and I thank him, and I said, "Well, I need to get you something." And he says, "No, you'll buy mine when we win a national championship."
There you go.
So, I mean, it's people like that you know, really keep you involved. And I'll pick up the phone and call, cold call. And you've helped me before with, you know, I'm probably bothering you about
never
who's the best outfield guy and who's the best infield guy and
never
who's the best hitting guys. And, you know, I called Air Force one day and talked to their assistant coach, and he just, you know, he talked to me for 25 minutes. Matt Deggs at Sam Houston State, I did the same thing to him. He sent me everything that his offensive philosophy, and, you know, the next thing I know, I'm printing out, you know, 12 pages of stuff, and that's just the way the college baseball fraternity is, and, you know, it's just some of the nicest people I've met in college athletics.
And obviously, you just adapt what you're learning there, although it is mostly the same, but you just adapt what you learn from the baseball perspective into your softball realm?
Yeah, exactly, and, you know, really, when I go to the convention, I sit there and listen to almost every speaker. Sometimes if it's a pitcher or a pitching talk, I'll see what it's all about. But that's really the only difference. And you can still learn things.
Sure.
But then, you know, that's usually when I go to the exhibits or, you know, go talk to somebody else. But everything else, I mean, if you come to our practice, you'd see Marty Lease's infield drills over and over and over, because he's been one of my favorites.
Yes.
He's actually helped me several times, and I take everything. Darren Erstad was awesome one year with outfield play.
That's right.
And it was one of the few times that I'd really heard something different on outfield, and I was just, I mean, I was enthralled with his talk. He was excellent.
So you plan on coming to Indianapolis. Talk to us about how excited you are walking into this year's show, especially getting there on site and mixing it up with all these great coaches.
Oh, it's the place to be, really. I mean, if you want to learn and network, and, you know, just meet people.
Sure.
I mean, it's really the best place to go in terms of college baseball. And I mean, there's high school guys too that have helped me. One of my favorites is Pat McQuaid from Miami area, and he's one of the best coaches I've ever met. And he's done it the right way for years and years down in Florida. But, you know, again, I get to sit and talk to him at the convention. I'd never get to talk to him probably any other way. But meeting him in Indianapolis for the 4 days is, you know, and it's a recharge for me.
Sure.
Because, you know, people ask, man, your season's starting. And I said, no, but this is when I recharge my batteries. And, you know, I get to listen to really good speakers and I learn a lot.
Love that. And for so many coaches, that's exactly what it is, the opportunity to recharge the batteries before the season kicks in. I want to follow up to, you know, those guys, Mitch and Coach Butler, bringing you into the ABCA fold. How do you bring your assistants along? And that's always an interesting question. We have so many head coaches that listen to our podcast, Murph, but how are you bringing them up? How are you challenging them to keep growing just as if somebody did that for you when you first got going?
Well, they know that I cannot stand the status quo. And if there's something or someone that's doing it better than us, I want to know, I want to figure it out, and then I want to do it better than them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we strive all the time to keep getting better. And
sure,
I want them to be on the cutting edge of everything that they do. And luckily, my pitching coach, Stephanie Prothro, she played for me, and I think she's going on year 7, I believe. So, you know, she's been with me for 12 to 13 years. Then, like I said, my associate head coach, Allie, has been with me for all 20, and I actually coached her at Louisiana Lafayette. Mm-hmm. And I think she's probably the best outfield coach in college softball. But I'm constantly asking them, you know, what do you need? What can I do for you? Is there any gadget or anything that you need in the bullpen or,
there you go.
Just whatever it is.
Sure.
I'm at a school that can afford those things. And if my budget can't, I have a really good booster club. Mm-hmm. So we try to get anything and everything, especially at the end of the year, if I have money left over in the budget. You know, last year we bought like 10 different things. And, you know, when the girls come back in August, it's like Christmas in August because we've got new different things to help them with stuff. So, but just don't settle with the status quo. Just keep getting better, because if you don't in this league, you're going to get run over in a hurry.
That's right. Take us back to the early years. Like you mentioned, you know, coaching the rec ball teams, what was motivating you then to get into coaching? And I think flash forward, what's your why to coach now? What, how has that evolved and changed over the years, and how are you still challenging that each and every day?
Well, growing up in a small town in Iowa, there's not much to do. And so literally probably every Saturday was in front of a TV watching some sort of sport. Mm-hmm. And I grew up, to tell you the truth, I wanted to be the next Bobby Knight.
Oh, there you go.
I loved college basketball.
Sure.
You know, in the middle of winter, you don't do much, but I watched a lot of Big Ten basketball, Notre Dame basketball, and it just became like this thing for me where I just got motivated to learn stuff. And I bought the, you know, coaching magazines when I was in high school, and then when I got to Northern Iowa, I took almost every coaching theory that I could. And now, early in my career, it was probably too much about winning.
Okay.
And now it's about providing the best experience that I can provide to these young ladies, because, you know, it's a quick 4 years. And I always tell them, you know, it's four chapters of maybe an 80-chapter book.
Sure.
And I want to be able to provide the best experience of their lives in this four-year period to prepare them for the next 40.
Mm.
And it's one of the best times in their lives, because there's a lot of things that are forming in their minds. And just to be there for them.
That's awesome. When you really think about guys that have had the success that you've had, to think, and we just had Perry Hill on last week, and to think that somebody that spent so many years coaching a sport, that they could, if I'm a younger coach, that they could watch a game and go, man, that's something new that I just picked up. But I think emphasizes the point that we have to be lifelong learners. We have to constantly challenge what we think and what we're teaching. But maybe you could point to something that you recently saw differently, maybe adapted or changed within your program that you would offer to our guys?
Well, this summer I tried to learn as much or more as I could with some hitting stuff.
Okay.
And I went on a couple road trips by myself and went up to Philadelphia and visited some guys, Baseball PDS, just a really, really good culture up there in this kind of a small facility. There's a hitting facility. They do throwing and weightlifting, and they really just opened their arms to me, and I learned a bunch of stuff from them. The gentleman that was the volunteer at Iowa that just took the job with the Cleveland Indians, Pete Lauritsen, he's helped me out so much just with some hitting stuff. And then see another guy in baseball that would talk to a nobody, really. Dave Hutchins, who was the hitting coach for the Houston Astros, another time, probably 20 years ago, I was at another convention, and I had bought some of his hitting tapes, and I emailed him and said, hey, I'm going to be at this convention. Are you going to be around? And he said, yeah. And so we went to lunch, and he spent 2 hours with me teaching me some stuff. And then lo and behold, you know, 20 years later, he's World Series champion and hitting coach for the Houston Astros. And, you know, to this day, still emails me and texts me, and just one of the coolest guys I've ever met, for a pro sport guy. You know, but I've asked him questions about Altuve and what he does to be so good. And, you know, we've used some of that stuff this year with our kids because it was a heck of a World Series to watch.
Absolutely. Well, you know, an interesting thing that I picked up listening to a couple interviews you've been on in prep for this show is, you know, in the way that you run your program, you don't pick captains, which I think is a unique aspect, which I hope you go into, but also think you guys pick a new theme each year, which I've heard a couple coaches doing, but the way that you went into it, I thought was really neat. Could you open up both those concepts for our guys?
With captains, I just think the cream rises to the top. And I think if you name two or three people that could stifle some people that have something that they really good to say. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we give opportunities for everybody to be a leader, in different ways. We have, we used to call it a cleaning crew, but, a lady gave us $2 million donation 5 years ago. So when somebody gives you $2 million, it becomes the Cinderella Club.
That's right.
And there's five young ladies that are responsible for cleaning the clubhouse mm-hmm. every week. And they vacuum, they sweep, they pick up the trash, they make sure everybody's locker looks good. And we name a captain of that group or leader. And she's responsible to make sure that everything's done the right way. And if I walk out last and there's something out of place, she's the one that gets the text message or the call. And so it's up to her how she responds. And we randomly pick those people. It's not a senior. It could be a sophomore. It could be a freshman mm-hmm. who's the leader of the week. And then that gives them an opportunity, you know, for them to decide, okay, do I want to call everybody back or am I just going to go in and pick up the stuff that he saw?
Sure.
So for us, it's worked out really well. And then in huddles, everybody has an opportunity to say something. And obviously not everybody is a vocal leader. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of kids that lead by example and they do the right thing on and off the field. And they're basically a leader because they do exactly what we tell them to do. So I think, you know, that way the kids that are going to talk will talk and they become great teammates. They become role models for the younger kids. And, it's just worked for us every year. And then the themes, it just kind of started one year, probably reading a book or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, last year it was called the gold standard, and almost every practice plan that I would bring out to the field, I printed out in gold paper. We put signs up in cool. gold letters. They got a gold paper clip at the beginning of the season. I bought them at a Michael's store. I found them. They were these huge,
sure.
real thick, gold paper clips, and they put them on their backpacks. So they saw it every single day, and we were trying to explain to them that we're going to be the gold standard in everything we do, not just on the field, off the field, in the classroom, and, you know, just reminding them every single day that you're supposed to do the right thing at all times. And we ended up with a 3.647 team GPA, and we were third in the country.
Wow.
So they really buy into that stuff. And the year we won it, the girls came up with it, and it was finish it, because we had gotten to the World Series so many times, and that year they wanted to finish it, and lo and behold, they did. One year it was grit. One of my favorites also is a word called mudita.
Yes.
And one of my favorite coaches I've met at the convention, a guy named Mike Deegan. Mm-hmm. Him and I go back and forth with mudita. He's used it with his team, but mudita is, I would say to my kids all the time, for probably the first 20 years of the program, can you be as happy for a teammate's success as if you did it yourself?
That's right.
So Sheets, if you hit a home run, am I going to run out to home plate and celebrate with you? And somebody walk into the stadium at the exact time when we high five, they should not know which one of us hit the home run based on our reactions.
Love it.
And if you go to a lot of other stadiums, there's a lot of kids that sit in the dugout and they pout, or they, you know, they're Debbie the Downer, and or they're jealous mm-hmm. of the kid that hit the home run. Well, the opposite of mudita is jealousy or envy. And I was reading a book over Christmas break one year called Help the Helper, which is an awesome book to read for a coach. It kind of combines business and sports. And the chapter was on servant leadership. And the author wrote, having vicarious joy in someone else's success. In other words, and then it was the word mudita. Mm-hmm. And I shot up in bed and I was like, oh my gosh, there's a word for what we've been trying to preach. And it was mudita. And it's one of the hardest things to get someone to buy into. But when they do, it is unbelievable to see You know, and we'll say if a pitcher throws a no-hitter, the first three people out there should be the three pitchers that weren't pitching, you know, and celebrating with their teammate. And when you can get that with a team, the sky's the limit. And you can see it. You can see it. And, you know, I read stories of, you know, professional baseball talking about, you know, when they scout, they're looking at character over talent. And, you know, and one of my favorite players of all time is the ultimate glue guy, and David Ross and his story about glue guys.
Sure.
And that's all that is a guy that has Budita. Because if you're either, you know, when you're sitting on the bench or you're starting, if you win the World Series, your ring is the same size as the guy that started if you're the 25th player.
That's right.
You're not getting a smaller ring. So are you going to make a difference on the bench? Because what you say or what you don't say does make a difference.
That's right. Oh, we cannot have a Mudita reference if we do not acknowledge Joe Ferraro, 1% Better Project, and his podcast. He talks about Mudita, and that's the one guy that brought that word into my life, and I know Coach Deegan uses it as well, one that makes you think a little bit different when you approach team aspects and you or things inside it, like an inner office relationship. And, you know, if we win, we all get paid. So let's get excited about what each of us are doing, because it all moves towards the team success, which is huge. I'm so glad you brought that to our guys. We'll come back to Help the Helper here in just a second. But I want to get into this because I think, and maybe Allie could be the best person for this question, but I'm interested, Murph, what would you offer? Hidden talents, then obviously hobbies outside of softball. What's keeping you busy?
I'm not talented.
There's got to be something in there.
Hobbies are probably to go to a sporting event.
Sure.
I'd rather have an experience than a gift. And, you know, something sits on a shelf, gets dusty, but like one of my favorites was, I think it was the 2000 Subway Series. I got to go see the Mets and the Yankees.
Oh,
and,
wow.
The first game was a 12-inning game, 4-3 Yankees win. Things like that are huge to me. You know, a Super Bowl, I've seen Coach Saban, I think, three or four national championships. Then the Pasadena, you know, the Orange Bowl, things like that. Those things really, really get me excited. And plus you get to learn from whoever is coaching or playing, because you get to see a sporting event, you know, Wimbledon or something like that would be incredible, or, you know, traveling. But I'm not one to, you know, I've never fished. I've never hunted, which is crazy in the state of Alabama, because I think everybody else has, but I guess I just don't have the time to do it. And I don't play golf.
That was going to be my next question. So when you have the scramble, you're just kissing babies and shaking hands. You're not swinging it.
Yep. I'm handing out the beer and the Coca-Cola.
Love it. All right, so no hidden talents? Like, you don't play a trombone on the side? You're not like a karaoke nightclub junkie?
No.
Nothing like that?
No. None. No, you don't want that.
Well, God, I can dream. So let's go back to talking about resources and Help the Helper. And I just ran across Legacy, talking about the New Zealand All Blacks. And that's something that's really got me charged. I just wrote down Help the Helper as a book I'll pick up on Amazon if it's got your recommendation behind it. But I think for our guys paying attention, Murph, take us through, are there any maybe daily habits or routines that you follow that you think have really helped organize yourself to maybe attack the day differently, but also some resources you would share, books or podcasts or anything like that would move our coaches down a better path?
Well, I think one of the best pieces of advice that I got from a gentleman that is just a huge softball guy in the state of Alabama, just a really good friend of our program. And he told me one time the best thing that he did for himself, he hired a trainer. And I hired a trainer as well. He's a sports nut. His favorite team is in Alabama, which drives me nuts, but he's in town, just a small, like a private gym.
Mm-hmm.
And that literally has saved me from a lot of stress. And that's one of the best things you can do, is invest in yourself that way. And my dad died when he was 52 of his third heart attack, and I'm kind of approaching that that birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to keep going, and that's one of the best ways to do it. And that's probably the first thing, you know, every morning. I go to him either two or three times a week. But then resources, one of my favorites is TED Talks.
Yes.
And it's crazy that people spend tons of money to go see them live when we can watch them for free. And it's, you know, if I'm driving to the airport in Birmingham, or if I'm going recruiting, you know, on a long drive, I'll get my phone ready and stick it into the radio and listen to TED Talks, you know, for 3 hours. And usually you can get about, you know, 6 to 8, because they're really no more than 20 minutes.
That's right.
But they're some of the best things that I've ever done or listened to. Every one of them is worth the 20 minutes. Tons of resources on Twitter, YouTube, Probably my favorite guy, though, right now to learn from is a guy named Tim Elmore.
Okay.
And he founded the company called Growing Leaders. And if any of your coaches that are listening to this want to know how to reach Generation I, Y, and Z, which is the generations that we're coaching right now, because they're different from us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I graduated college in 1988, and I'm two generations away from them. And to me, he's like the expert in reaching this generation. And he's just completed his written many books, but his latest is called Marching Off the Map. It's one of the best. Every word is true to itself, and he just knows what he's doing in terms of reaching this generation.
Hmm.
And one of my favorite things that he says is, you want to connect and not control. And this generation is like that.
Sure.
They love connection. So I've leaned on him heavily. He has a like a 3-day kind of seminar convention type thing in Atlanta every summer. I've gone to that a couple times, but it's one of the best things that I've done. And his book, I'm guaranteeing you, if they read it, they'll have a better appreciation of how to reach some of the kids that they're coaching now. And it goes for high school, too.
That's awesome. Any podcasts that if you picked up your phone right now, that would be maybe glued into your library?
I think I have like 28.
Okay.
I listened to a couple on the way to the airport the other day to go home for Entree Leadership.
Yes.
Finding Mastery. The Mind Side, one of the guys that works with us at Alabama, he's terrific. His name is Dr. Brett McCabe. He is awesome. One of the best resources that we have at Alabama. He actually played baseball for Skip.
He did.
Burtman at LSU and won national championships. And he was a relief pitcher. And our kids absolutely love him because he's been there and done that. And, you know, he knows the game. He knows the lingo. And they really respect the heck out of him. Plus, he's just one of the nicest guys to talk to. That's probably the best ones, or the ones that I can think of.
Okay.
The Coaching You, obviously ABCA, those are some good ones.
This is a question that's new to our format and one that we're trying out on you. And I think when we talk about highs and lows, which we've done in the past, I think we can just cut through it and let's get directly to the crux of your most humbling moment or moments in coaching.
Well, probably, you know, we went to the World Series 7 times
mm-hmm.
and came home with, you know, not a championship. And I kept saying to myself, okay, what are we doing wrong? We need to do something different. Am I going to be the Buffalo Bills of college softball? You know, the guy I root for the most at the World Series is Mike Martin of Florida State.
Sure.
You know, I really hope he wins one before he retires because I know what he's feeling. And, you know, just keep going back. It's it's grit, you know, ability to bounce back. And finally on the 8th trip, we win it. But you know, you said earlier in the introduction, I've gone 11 times. Well, 1 for 11 isn't the greatest either, you know?
Not so our sports.
I want to win another one, you know? But that's probably a very humbling time to go to the World Series. And, I mean, the margin of error, and you know this.
Sure.
When you get the 8 best teams in the country in a tournament, it's as small as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And if everything doesn't go your way, you're not going to win it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So one of the coolest things about going to the World Series is I'll hear from tons of my baseball buddies and they'll text me or call and leave a message. And, you know, one year they were like, I don't know how you do it because every play matters. And,
yes.
You know, the bases are 60 feet. So if the shortstop bobbles, the kid's safe.
That's right.
You know, so every single pitch and play literally matter on the game. And, I think they're probably more stressed than I am sitting at home watching it.
Well, let's walk down this path. Take us inside some of the funniest stories that have happened to you throughout your career there at Alabama.
One for sure involves Coach Saban.
Okay.
And probably one of the best kids I've ever recruited. First team All-American pitcher last year, Alexis Osorio. She's from Riverside, California. And we found out that her dad was a huge New York Giants fan. So we don't take every kid to Coach Saban. But if they have a football connection, because we've had two kids whose dads played in the NFL,
okay,
that was an easy connection.
Sure.
So we go over. We're a little bit early. Secretary said 1:15. It's probably 1:10, and she's the nicest lady in the world. And we go into his office, and you know, she's just, well, sit down. And she tells Alexis to sit in his desk chair. And then she says, try this on. And she gives Lexi his straw hat that he wears every day at practice.
Oh, man.
And her mom and dad and everybody's taking pictures of her sitting at Saban's desk. And all of a sudden, the door opens, and we all turn around, and it's Coach Saban standing there. And I thought for about 2 seconds that I was fired.
Yeah.
And everybody's quiet and we're all looking at him. And then all of a sudden he says, "You look pretty good." Huge relief. Everybody laughed.
Yeah, sure.
We go over to his couch and chairs and sit down. And, he had 15 minutes because it was, I think we were playing Arkansas on CBS the next day. And mm-hmm. the CBS crew was coming in to interview him. But he's, you know, as friendly as they get. Sitting in there one-on-one with him, and he's done nothing but support our program. And this year, he's 6-for-6 now with kids that we've taken over. So, he likes that too. But on my first interview at Alabama, it's one of my favorite stories is, I'd never been to the state of Alabama, and it was around April of 1996. And they take me to a hotel. I can see it right now. I'm sitting in my desk, and it's across the street from the athletic, complex. And I'm fifth in line at the Sheraton, and I hear a voice, and the gentleman that's checking out is talking to the young lady at the hotel desk, and, you know, he's chatting, and he definitely has an entourage, and at that time, we didn't even know what the hell an entourage was,
yeah, right.
But he had one. Golf clubs, 3 suitcases, all these people with him, and finally, he says, "I'll see you in the fall," and I kept saying to myself, "I know that voice."
Mm-hmm.
Well, he turns around, and it was Joe Namath.
Wow.
And yeah, and I almost told the gentleman that was with me, "I'll coach for free."
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I knew who Joe Namath was, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not in Fayette, Iowa anymore.
Sure.
And if this is what it's going to be like, you know, sign me up.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully I got the job, but it was just unreal to see, you know, Joe Namath walk right by me, actually. And then, you know, at ABCA conventions, it's crazy because I literally would get phone calls almost every convention that I was at, and people were thinking that I was the other Pat Murphy.
Right.
That used to be at Notre Dame and ASU.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was with a pro team this summer, but I'm not sure. I thought he was the bench coach,
yeah,
maybe for the Brewers.
The Brewers. Mm-hmm.
I mean, one guy talked to me for literally 2 minutes before I even had a chance to say, "Sir, are you looking for Arizona State's Pat Murphy? Because this is Alabama softball Pat Murphy."
Sure.
So those were some funny times, but it's just, you know, I could probably talk for 2 hours about stories at Alabama.
Oh, I can only imagine. I think actually the first time I reached out to you was post ABCA chat, one of our very first ones, and you jumped on and I said, "Coach Murphy, hey, we started this podcast. I'd love to get you on at some point." And you actually respond, "I should find it." And it said, "I think you got me confused with the other Pat Murphy." I'm like, "No, I know exactly who you are, and I'd love to have you on the podcast one day." Okay, let's go into this. All right, let's talk about your personal Mount Rushmore. I think that's such a powerful question when you truly can nail down the 3 or 4 people that impacted you the most over your coaching career. Who would you put up on that pedestal?
Well, probably first, Yvette Girard, who is in the Hall of Fame for college softball. She started the program at Louisiana Lafayette, then went to LSU. She's the lady that gave me my first opportunity in collegiate athletics when I was 22 years old, and taught me the value of hard work and, you know, never taking no for an answer, and just was one of the best ladies that I've ever met. Second would be Rick Heller, which is the University of Iowa baseball coach, and he's just been one of the greatest guys, greatest resources, best friends. You know, when I was a high school senior in Fayette, it was after his freshman year at Upper Iowa University, which at the time was a Division III, and he actually umped many of my high school baseball games in Fayette because he was staying in town and lifting weights and getting ready for, he played 3 sports, I think, at Upper Iowa, but,
wow.
You know, that was when I first met him, and to this day, I can call him at any time, and he helps me with stuff, and he was a huge factor in us winning the national championship. So he'd definitely be up there. And I, if I was an AD, he'd be one of the first calls that I would make because he's that good. And he can win anywhere in any climate. And then probably Mal Moore, who was the athletic director at Alabama. He was a backup quarterback. He was the backup quarterback, actually, to Joe Namath. And he used to tell everybody that the reason why Joe was so good was because he was the backup. So he pushed him so much.
That's right.
But then he became offensive coordinator for Bear Bryant. Went into the pros for a little bit. Coached with the Cardinals. Coached at Notre Dame, actually. And then was an assistant AD and then worked his way up to be the athletic director at Alabama. But he was one of the biggest influences, too. And then Sarah Patterson, who was former Alabama gymnastics coach for 36 years.
Right.
She was right down the hallway, and she really set the tone for women's athletics at Alabama. She won 6 national championships, and if there's a better marketing lady in college athletics, I don't know. I haven't met her, because Sarah would routinely sell out a 15,500-seat stadium for gymnastics meets. And then eventually her youngest daughter played for me. So she was
very cool.
Probably those people would be up there.
That's awesome. This is a two-part question to round this out, Murph. You've just been so awesome with your time and your content and what you've been willing to offer our guys. Can't let you go if we don't ask this question. What's the best advice that you've received throughout your coaching career? And then at the end of that, empty out your pockets. What other advice would you offer our coaches paying attention to this show?
Well, when I left for Northern Iowa, my dad didn't talk a lot, but he did say probably the best thing ever to me was, he said, 4 years of hard work will equal 40 years of easy. Mm-hmm. And he had no idea, but it was absolutely true, because, you know, I've coached since I was 22, and really I haven't worked a day in my life. So it's paying off right now. And then I'd probably say to all the coaches, especially younger coaches, always put the person first and the athlete second, because that's someone's son or daughter that you're coaching, and he or she is just a kid. And if you could always think that the person comes first, and I tell my kids all the time that I'm going to love them no matter what, if they go 0-4 or 4-4, because I've seen so many coaches and kids, parents that, you know, refuse to talk to a kid if they didn't get a key hit or if they gave up a home run. And it just is really poisoning youth sports right now. And, you know, I've seen kids quit because they didn't have fun. And if they know that I'm going to love them no matter what they do, it eases a little bit, because they've got enough pressure on them. And, you know, you have a stadium full of 4,000 people, and there's a little pressure on everybody.
Sure.
So there's even, we have a sign up in our clubhouse when the girls come into the clubhouse that says person in bold and cap, and then a line, and then athlete in lowercase and not bolded. And so they see it every day they walk into the clubhouse, because it's not something you can say just one time at the beginning of the year, but you have to continually show it to them week after week after week after week. And then, you know, as a good example of that is, we're playing Oklahoma in the game to go to the World Series in 2015. A young lady named Marissa Runyon was up to bat, and I'd pinch hit her the time before because she was 0-13. And in the super regional, she barely touched the ball. And the night before, we're losing, and she's up to bat. The bases are loaded, 2 outs in the bottom of the 7th, and she swings and misses for strike 3. And I'll never forget this, because the next day, 24 hours later, guess who's up to bat? Bottom of the 6th, bases loaded, 2 outs, we're down 3-1, and she's up to bat. And I had re-entered her into the game, and first pitch she sees, she hits for a grand slam. I don't think there's any way that she hits that ball if she doesn't realize that everybody in the dugout, the coaches, everybody on the team loves her no matter what. And it's just happened many, many times in my career where just these like miracle moments.
Sure.
And I think it's a part of it where they realize they're going to be okay. You know, I'm going to appreciate her more for the type of kid she is, her leadership, her ability to be a great teammate, mm-hmm. you know, ability to get stuff done in the classroom. That's way above anything on the field. And I wish somebody would have told me that when I was 22, because I think I would have won more games, you know, my first 10 years. Because it's amazing. I've won more now when I literally put the person first and not worry about winning and not worry about losing. And it's worked out.
It's awesome. You are a stud. I'm beyond thankful that we had the opportunity to sit down and do this. I think anytime we can bring on someone with your experience and perspective, we're in the right path, but more importantly, a 30-year continuous member. So thanks for being part of the ABCA, Murph, and we look forward to catching you in Indianapolis, and thanks for jumping on our podcast, man. Wish you the best of luck.
Thanks a lot, Sheets. And, you know, one thing I tell my team is, will you add value to the organization? And when Mr. Kylitz hired you, he definitely added value to the ABCA, so kudos to you.
Thanks, my friend. I appreciate that. So for those of you playing at home, Murph is a dude. Talk about a humble spirit from a coach that has built a national powerhouse and is still on the search for the better way and for more knowledge, which should be a lesson to every single one of us listening in. And that's exactly the mission of our podcast. Huge thanks to Coach Murphy for his time and his insight. It's always great connecting with extraordinary coaches, and we wish him, his staff, and their program the very best walking into the spring, and we look forward to seeing Murph with us in Indy this January. That's right, you heard it on this show today. Coach Murphy and 6,000 other coaches worldwide are making plans for Indianapolis this January at our 74th annual ABCA convention. It's 4 days of baseball heaven running from January 4th through the 7th, and we hope you and your staff are making plans to join us and you can experience this for yourself. Head over to our website, abca.org. If you click on membership, see what we're doing for coaches across every single level of baseball. Then you can find events and you can check out the convention information for yourself. And if you have any questions at all, never hesitate to reach out to us. We would be fired up to help bring you into the baseball coaches fraternity that we have rolling here at ABCA. Few notes here, folks. We want to make sure you're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. We are getting ready to cross into 20,000 followers, and we hope that you're one of those folks. You can also find me on there as well, at CoachSheets3, or you can reach me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. We always love connecting with you guys, and I've got a slew of emails and messages staring at me right now that I'll be diving into shortly to respond back, because your feedback is extremely important to us. Without the tens of thousands of you listening into this show each and every week, this podcast is no more. So we want to hear from you. Tweet at us. Tag us in a tweet and let us know how this show in particular, or any of our shows, hit you on the other end of the call. What quote stuck out to you? What story hit home? Tweet at us and let us know. Sharing the podcast through social media or through text or email, that lets people around you, whether it's other coaches or your players, former players, maybe parents that follow you, they know you're investing in your development. And you never know, one tweet, one text, one email, that might change that person's path moving forward. You might make one of your followers 1% better just by that very move. So again, let us know how we can help out. Send them the link to iTunes, send them to abca.org/podcast. And again, make sure they're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. A couple other things I want to make sure you're aware of. Tonight, if you're listening in on November 28th, is our hashtag ABCA chat. We do these every other week, and it's only for an hour, where coaches from around the world check in with us and we talk about a podcast topic. Tonight's, we'll discuss infield play from last week's episode with Perry Hill from the Miami Marlins. We're going to talk infield play, asking questions while our coaches share their insight and their information. It's networking, it's connecting, and it's growing and developing. We hope you can check in on our next hashtag ABCA chat. We also just wrapped up our 2017 ABCA Barnstormers Coaching Clinics Tour, and the videos from each and every Barnstormer stop are on Twitter and also on Facebook. Search hashtag ABCA Clinics. You could scroll through all those great videos we posted from this year's Barnstormers Clinics Tour, and we hope you enjoyed that great content. And again, lastly, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association. We appreciate what each and every one of you are doing out there to grow the game of baseball. You're impacting lives. You're always staying hungry for more knowledge. And we promise if you keep listening, we're going to keep pumping these out. So as always, coaches, thank you for listening in, staying dialed into the Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Until next week, we ask you keep growing, you keep developing, you keep challenging yourself inside the game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.